Going Linux, episode 463, Top 5 Myths About Linux.
Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here, it's the future machine. No virus.
Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, Top 5 Myths About Linux. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Larry. You missed the show. Error in the show notes. It's funny.
Yeah. It's been a while. I'm getting rusty here.
Yeah, well, you've been busy and... Yeah.
Yeah.
Being the man about the country. So, yeah, I'll catch you a little slack.
Okay. So, you've been a little busy. You getting some upgrades to your computer?
Yeah, I'm getting some upgrades to my computer today. The memory I ordered is in and the hard drive. So, I'm doubling my memory and putting in a solid state drive. I have a spinning Rust, so I got a really killer deal on a Western Digital SSD. So I'm going to go down there and pick all the information up, and then we'll put it all in. So I'll get a little extra oomph out of my machine.
Yeah, that should speed it up a bit.
Just a little bit.
That's good. So, well, congratulations.
Well,
on that.
Yeah. Well, I've been searching. I'm cheap.
You got a deal.
Yeah, I got a deal. You know, the memory has really come down in price, and before it, you know, goes up again, it was like $53 and some change for 32 gigabytes of DDR4. It says DD5, but I don't know. They say my machine can handle it. We'll see. I know it has DD4. It's a little speed boost, I think. But when I go down there, we're gonna put it in to make sure everything works before. Yeah, but yeah.
Now that's an idea.
Yeah, because
make sure it works.
I would be very ill if because it's out of the middle of nowhere, so I have to drive to Albuquerque, which is like 38 miles one way.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's
but,
not.
But it's downhill to get there.
But I have to go back uphill. I live on the mountains.
Yeah, that's true.
I live
that's
at a high true. Elevation. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to carry it down there and just to make sure everything works. Because they do have DD4 too. It's even cheaper. But if I can get more a little performance oomph out of it, I will. I'll spend the extra little bit. But I just, I'm not going to come up here, get it all put in and say, oh, it doesn't work. I would be completely very unhappy.
Yeah. You have to drive twice.
I'd rather be playing, you didn't hear this from me, would rather be playing games than driving.
Yes. Oh, well, that makes sense to me.
You don't play games.
Well, not usually.
Solitaire doesn't count.
I'd rather, no, I don't play solitaire, but I'd rather not be driving, so that's all fine.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Yeah, I know.
Do you play games at all?
Not for a long time, quite frankly.
How can you?
I try them out every time I install a new new distribution.
That's not a game.
I see if there's another game and, get Tux. What's the
Tux
one?
Tux Cart.
Tux Cart. Yeah, there you go.
You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go on.
So what we're talking about is five myths that people have about Linux. And they've been around a long time. And I revamped the article on our website after I revamped the website to kind of update it a little bit. But the myths about Linux still persist. So, you know, the show notes will include a link to that article on our website, and you can take a look through there. And if you want to follow along, that's great. And if you don't, then you're not going to miss anything. We're going to cover it all here. Anyway.
Okay. So, what are the differences between Linux distributions if they are all Linux? Let's think about this. Millions of computer users already are using or preparing to switch to Linux because soon their computers won't be able to cope with Windows and they cannot afford to upgrade their hardware. Linux is not just their only choice, but it's their best choice. Sometimes, though, it's the myths and misconceptions about Linux that stand in the way. In this episode, we hope to dispel some of these myths.
All right, so let's deal with myth number one. Linux is difficult to use. I hope nobody takes that audio segment and records me just saying that. Nope, that hasn't been true for years. Linux was originally designed for people with some computer programming or just computer expertise, but nowadays Linux looks almost identical to Windows and it's just as easy to use. In some ways, actually, Linux is a bit easier to use because it seldom crashes or gets infected by any sort of malware.
I absolutely agree. So I'll give you an example. When I first started using, my first one that I really started using was Ubuntu 6.10, I think it was.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember I had it was a lot easier to use, but I still had to use some command line and, you know, they didn't have the App Store. So you had to use Synaptic Package Manager, which is fine. I didn't have snaps or flat packs. I think they did have app images, but I didn't know about those at the time. So the drivers were you had to install using the command line. They didn't have the driver manager, and you know it was a step forward, but that was what. 20 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that 6.10 was supposed to be a step forward. Okay. So you still had a lot of stuff you had to do to make it work. Sometimes your modem wouldn't work or the wireless wouldn't work or you couldn't get the drivers weren't in the kernel. I mean, it was a challenge.
Yeah. Or you had some sort of printer couldn't get connected. Yeah.
So today, I installed the 24.04 on Ubuntu.
Yes.
Never touched the command line, clicked the driver manager, and downloaded and installed the NVIDIA driver. Went to the App Store, clicked on, I want this, 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 and this, installed it, and I was done. Everything worked. I had the latest video driver, had all the latest drivers. My network card and wireless card were supported. And you remember, wireless cards used to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah,
you just sometimes some of the Broadcoms, you would just like, the answer was you take it out and put another one in because it wasn't going to work. Everything worked out, sound worked, and that was another one. Sound was always an issue. Sometimes it was a hit or miss. I don't believe I've had any problem in the past 15 years with sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it went from 20 years ago today, which I never touched a command line to install it. I didn't have to use it for anything. Everything was graphical user interface, or GUI as it's called. You can't, it's still there, but you really don't need to touch the command line. You never have to open up a terminal and say, look at the scary text. It's all done in a nice, friendly, you've got Ubuntu, it's really good. You've got Fedora. You've got Linux Mint. You've got Ubuntu Mate, which is also a very good one. And you got, I think I said Bazite, but you have a bunch of different ones. Elementary, if you're kind of a Mac user, everything is done through graphical user interface. Very easy, nothing scary. In the past year, I might have opened the terminal 10 times, but that was because I was playing with something in the terminal, but it was just something I wanted to try. I wanted to see what a command did or whatever. But for the day-to-day, I never had to touch it. Everything just worked.
I also put 24.04 Ubuntu Cinnamon on my older XPS 13, which had been running Ubuntu for years, of course, but when I installed it, first you, during the installation process, connect to the internet and tell it to download all the updates. So you just go through the various panels that they have there, and it guides you through it. And getting it set up was a breeze. In fact, without installing anything in addition to what came with it, the operating system immediately, after rebooting, after the installation, immediately found my wireless printer, and it was ready to use within seconds. I didn't have to initiate any sort of install printer or anything like that. It just found it, and it was usable right away. And I can tell you this, having installed Windows 11 on a computer to sell it, it took multiple reboots, took a lot of crap to try to get it to even install. And then once it was installed, of course, you don't have any significant application software, or the ones you have are the ones that are the trial versions that you have to start paying monthly for. And it took, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours, or maybe even more. I'm thinking it was more. If you include the installation of the applications that were needed on there, it was probably more like 2.5 hours. And same computer, install 24.04, Ubuntu Cinnamon, and within half an hour, it was up and running, ready to go. And this is no speed demon. It's got a 7th generation Intel processor. I had upgraded the RAM and put an SSD, an M.2 drive in it. So it was running a little faster than it did when I first got it. But still, it is a significant difference in terms of installing. But then once you start using it, you realize, okay, it's got a lot of the software that I need. I don't have to install anything. And if I do need to install it, there's a nice repository that's, you know, there for me to use without having to hunt around for drivers or hunt around for applications or any of that stuff. You just install it and go, and don't even have to reboot in between 3 times.
So I actually have the exact times that it takes to install.
Okay.
I have the machine I'm running right now, the game machine, it's a 10th generation i7. And I've upgraded the hard drive. So I was telling you, I actually am separating my operating systems. I just reinstalled Windows 11. I'm putting my Linux on an SSD, thus why I'm buying one. So they're just separate, so they don't touch each other. I'll use Windows right when I want to. I can't get a game to run on Linux. I just go ahead and just play the game. When I'm done, I log out, go back in, and use Linux to get things done, you know, every day. So basically, I have a Windows install for just games. That's it. That's all it gets done. So installing Windows 11 took me 1 hour and 23 minutes.
Okay.
I had installed Bazite, which is a slower install because it uses the OS tree and it does a bunch of stuff. You know, it took me 32 minutes. The here it is. I wrote it down. Ubuntu 24.04. Guess how long it took me from start to finish and have things installed, updated driver. Take a guess.
25 minutes.
13 minutes.
Wow. That's great.
Now, I mean, yes, I have a faster internet now for updates. Now, here's a kicker. You need a system real quick, and you got to get it up and running because you need to do something. Guess what? You can just use Live Image. But by the time I put the USB in, hit power, it was 13 minutes and a couple seconds after I had it updated and it was already connected to the internet and I was already surfing. 13 minutes.
Yep.
I did add a couple things. So we'll say in general, my total time, is 20 minutes tops.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah, an hour and 23 minutes with multiple restarts or 20 minutes with two restarts, one for the driver, for the video driver that it installed, mm-hmm. and one for all the updates. Because when the 24.04, I went ahead and used their free pro, so they downloaded a bunch of security hardening and stuff for it, so you had to reboot to get it active. So,
oh, okay.
So that's that would slow down. But yeah, that's an hour saved. And it was run perfect fine. Everything worked out of the box.
Yeah, and that's just the installation. The actual using of the computer, it's almost identical to what you do on Windows or on Mac. Maybe some of the buttons are in a different place.
There is one big difference.
Yeah.
With Windows 11, there's things you have to install, like... I had to install Discord and, you know, it, which is not a bad thing, but, it didn't come with an office, a built-in office software, you know, for Writer. Mm-hmm. So you had to buy it. Or one of the things I had forgotten about is it tries to sell you upgrades while you're installing the operating system. Would you like 365? Would you like a bigger install? Would you like to? I mean, it's like, no, I don't want any of it. Just install the operating system. So
yeah, you can upgrade to this monthly bill.
Yes,
for each of your software applications. Yeah, yeah. So keeping it running after installation and actually using it are easier as well. So I think we've dispelled that myth.
Yeah,
that it's as difficult to use. It's not. Not at all.
So, you know, the second myth is Linux has too few application programs.
Huh.
Okay. You can use your Linux to attend online classes, speak to your friends or family, surf the web, listen to music, watch movies, write documents, do household accounting, and play games. There are thousands of Linux applications programs as good or better Microsoft or other commercial software that they provide. And as bonus, the vast majority of them are free. So, Larry, you know they say there's too few application programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Don't believe them.
Don't believe them. Give you an example. Discord, that's what we use to record. That's running on Linux. Audacity runs on Linux. Steam runs on Linux. What else? Blender, which is used in movie theater, development.
Production,
It runs on Linux. You've got four or five different types of Office software. You've got Open Office, Free Office, Libre Office. There's a few others that that are in repositories. Last time I looked at the Nix package manager. Now this is This is probably the smallest, because you know the Ubuntu is probably even larger. It was over 80,000 applications. I'm sure you can find something. I mean, there's
you can, thousands and thousands. Yeah.
You've got browsers. You've got you can actually get Microsoft Edge on Linux. Why you would, I don't know, but you can. You've got Firefox, Opera, Vivaldi, Brave. I mean, the Flatpaks and Snaps and App Images have made it just not even an argument anymore. You can get 95%, except for some few specialized stuff that they're big commercial, like the Adobe stuff. There's open source alternatives to that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You have access to tools that can do the same thing. So I haven't ever had a problem. Well, when I first started, you remember before the Flatpaks and Snaps and all that stuff, you could probably say that this myth was true for a couple years, but it has been true for 15 years or so.
Yeah, and there are more and more software packages being developed every day for Linux.
And a lot of them are Linux native now.
Yes. You just go to the repositories for your particular distribution. You search for the category of software you want, or if you know the name of the software, you just search for that. And within seconds, you have it installed. And, you know, depending on your network speed and the speed of your computer, it might take minutes, but that would be it. Usually it's seconds. Yeah. I mean, I have a whole bunch of applications installed. Some of them I used once because I needed them for something. And I haven't bothered to uninstall them, but I could if I needed some space, but I don't. So, too few applications.
Yeah,
no. There's way more than you think, is there?
There's one thing that some of the... I know Zorin does this, which is it's kind of focused toward new people. They actually have, say you need something and you download the Windows and click on it. It will say, hey, you don't need to do this because there's a Linux version of this. Let us install that for you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so they have a database that, and then some. There's some stuff that I was on Bazite, and I wanted to see if it'd work because they have wine. So they have bottles, which is lets you run Windows software. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to run this piece of software. So I just double click the exe and it says, oh, open with bottles, create an environment, and then run the damn program. And it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
And it, yep. I shouldn't say damn, but yeah, it worked flawlessly. I didn't have to do anything. Yeah. It took about 30 seconds to set up the environment. And then after that, it worked just normal. The technology is coming farther and farther. They've got a lot of virtualization going on. They've got little databases in the system say, hey, you don't need to do Discord. This is a Windows binary for Discord. They have a Linux version. Here, let us install the Linux version. And they just do it. And it makes it easier for people coming over. So the disparity of software is becoming smaller and smaller. I don't even think about it 90% of the time. I can run 95% of all my games on Steam on Linux. So
yeah, and too few application programs. I don't hear it said that way anymore very much.
No.
What I do hear is I can't get application X. I need this specific application. Like I have to have Microsoft Office.
Or Adobe.
Well, do you really? Do you really have to have Microsoft Office? Well, I have access to three different Office suites from four different Office suites from my Linux installation. One is the Google Office suite. And of course, it's online, so it'll work in any browser. And I have access to the Microsoft, the free version of their Office suite online. I had to create a Microsoft account for some reason or other, probably to install Windows on something. And so I use that, and I can connect with the, they call it Office 365, but the free online Office. Then I have LibreOffice, which was installed by default. That comes with Ubuntu flavors by default. And I've also installed OnlyOffice. And the one that is most compatible with Microsoft Office installed on Windows hardware is OnlyOffice. Even the Microsoft Online version, I found, has some limitations. It's more like the Google Office suite that they have in terms of its features and its capabilities. LibreOffice still has some issues compatibility-wise with Microsoft Office's file formats, but OnlyOffice has gone a little bit further to make theirs a little more compatible. And if you stay away from the open document format, not the one that Microsoft calls open document format, but the actual open document format that's used by LibreOffice and OnlyOffice and the Google Office suites. If you stay away from those and you stay away from the older Microsoft Office formats, like for a spreadsheet, the .xls file format, and you use only the .xlsx or the more recent formats that are available in all of the Office suites, you are maximizing the chance that you won't have any problem with even Office formats that we used to be plagued with for a long time using Office. And similarly, you can find just about any equivalent to just about any software program that's out there. Now, if you are in a specialized industry like graphic artist and you need to use certain software programs because they are the industry standard, in some cases you can get away with using the Linux version that's not the same program, but the Linux alternative, let's put it that way, the Linux alternative, because once you save it in the appropriate format, nobody can tell the difference as to where it was prepared or created or anything like that. And even if there are some features missing from the application and you do have to use a Windows or a Mac version of a particular software application, then okay, maybe you can install a full version of Microsoft Windows on your computer to be able to run it. But maybe you don't even have to do that. Maybe you can run it in a virtual machine, or maybe you can run Wine or bottles or something like that to run the Microsoft program or the Windows program. So lots of different alternatives. Just because a specific program is not available doesn't automatically mean that you are locked out of using Linux for your computing needs.
And just a final note about the Office formats is those compatibility problems are becoming less and less, but most of that problem was self-inflicted by Microsoft for having a closed proprietary format. I mean, if they would have shared or made it cross-platform earlier, where, you know, it didn't matter what you use, because I use LibreOffice and I just save it a Word or whatever format is, and it works just fine. The only, like I said, the only thing is it gets a little crazy with the spreadsheets, but I don't do a lot of spreadsheets. I've used LibreOffice to rewrite my resume multiple times, and then I've had to tweak it at work, and they only use Microsoft, and I never had an issue. So, yeah, most of it is self-inflicted, so just keep that in mind. It's not because of the Linux application office suites, being as good. It's just that Microsoft made it difficult.
Yes, exactly. And I do use a lot of spreadsheets, and one of the issues that I found was in using one of the open source programs, doesn't matter which one it is, when you save a spreadsheet that's using formulas, especially formulas that process text, like converting from a date format into text format, or from text format into date format, or things like that. When you save in the old .xls format, The formulas get rewritten in a, quote, compatibility version, which screws things up.
Yeah, it does.
In some cases. But if you use exactly the same program, exactly the same spreadsheet, exactly the same formula, and you save it in .xlsx format, it saves just fine and runs perfectly in the online version and or the hardware version of Microsoft Office.
I did not know that they had gotten that to work better. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I switched over to only Office for some of my Office needs is because they had a much better implementation than even LibreOffice for that. And I think LibreOffice has caught up now. So not a problem. Yeah. So myth number two, busted.
Yes, very much busted.
Okay, myth number three, there are too many Linux versions. That may not be a myth.
There is quite a few, but okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of Linux distributions, and that can make it difficult to make a choice. But they all use the same basic kernel, the Linux kernel. They all use the same basic commands with some variations depending on which distribution you're using, and the same programs for the most part. For the vast majority of programs, application programs, they're using exactly the same thing, maybe designed to be installed with a different packaging format. But other than that, it's the same program. And that's the direct opposite of what's true with Microsoft Windows. There are various Microsoft Windows operating systems like Windows 95, Windows 7, Windows ME, Windows NT, Windows CE, Windows 2000, Windows XP, Windows 10, and Windows 11.
You forgot 98.
They are, yeah, oh, I forgot 98. And they're not alike. They resemble each other only superficially. On top of that, each one gets fragmented even further when Microsoft rolls out a new service pack or major patch to fix bugs and security holes. They are not the same base in some cases, whereas with Linux, it's the same kernel, regardless of what you choose. And for the most part, it's the same applications, no matter what you choose. And our website focuses on the fundamentals of desktop Linux applications. And our recommendations are usually Ubuntu Mate and Linux Mint for new switchers from other operating systems. So even though there are many, many different versions or distributions of Linux, if you stick to those two, you can't go wrong. There are others you can use, but those today are the two that I would say are the most friendly for new users switching from other operating systems that you may be used to and familiar with. And if you would like to look at other distributions, we have an article that can help you make the choice by looking at some of the key differences between Linux distributions. And we have that linked in our show notes as well. What do you think, Bill? Are there too many Linux distributions?
No, there's not, because you have the general purpose. You have ones aimed at new users, and you've named two of them, Ubuntu Mate and Linux Mint, but you also have Elementary OS, which is people that will find the more Mac-like interface, more to their liking. And you've got Zorin, which also has where you can choose different ones. So you have four really good choices, and it's kind of funny, they're all based, I remember because you said that you kind of follow the basic same commands, they're all based on Ubuntu. You are absolutely right about Microsoft Windows. They're using the same base, but they've got a bunch of old legacy code in there too. So, give you example, they're using, if I'm not badly mistaken, I remember reading this not too long ago, that they're using the old NT base. Okay, they're just building upon it and changing it. But the reason that this come up was there's still tools that from 90, Windows 7, and you also forgot Windows 8, Larry.
Yeah, oh, Windows 8 and Windows Vista. And, I mean, there are just too many to list.
but
I'll add it to the list.
But yeah, but the thing is that you have 95 XP, 98, 7, 8, 10, etc., etc. But they're using the old code base, but they're just changing some stuff. They have old. You could, there's three different ways that you can do certain things because they just left it in there. It's legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. So they keep adding on top of it, and there's different ways to do different stuff. So Windows 10 and Windows 11, they're very similar. There's just more telemetry in Windows 11, and there's some new interface, and it's fine, but they've got so much legacy code that they're having to try to keep a lot of 32 libraries and stuff that are not used a lot. And they've actually been talking about they need to do a real spring cleaning and get it cleaned out. It's, you know, because there's just so much cruft in there from all these priors. They've just kept leaving them in there, and they keep adding and adding and adding and never kind of trimmed up. So, and you can't really see what they're doing because it's closed source. At least, I mean, I know we always say you can go look at the kernel. Yes, we say that that's if you know how to read the kernel, but it's there. You know what they're doing. And this is an important fact. You should always remember, you don't know what's being done under the hood in Microsoft Windows. Okay, people don't have access to all the changes, but you do know what's going on, because there's thousands of people constantly looking at the Linux kernel and constantly seeing if anything's been added that would be questionable. You know, it's different licenses. So there's a lot of great benefits to open source. I just, we have distributions for new people. You have distributions who are hobbyists who want to tinker with everything. And you have others that are just general purpose, like that are used in companies. So, like Fedora is used for Nabora, which is a gaming. It's still the same operating system, just some tweaks on top. And so when Fedora updates, then Nabora will get the update. So it's the same, but different. It's the same base. You know, there's Ubuntu base. They just change how things are done, but the same commands work. It has the same kernel. Yeah. So if you use Ubuntu Mate and you are looking at Linux Mint, you can do the same things. They're the same base. They just have different ways of approaching it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it does make sense.
And I just went on a tangent. Sorry about that, guys. But it's. I get so crazy when people say, well, Windows is this. But Windows got a lot of cruft that you just don't know about.
Yeah. Microsoft seems to be focused on a lot of other things these days other than Windows and Office. And I'm not sure how much they're actually putting into the development of those. In fact, I have been hearing about some efforts on the part of Microsoft to supply lower cost, if you will, computer hardware for businesses that don't actually have Windows installed. They are machines that connect to the internet, and then you pay monthly to use Windows online.
Yep.
So thin clients. Yeah, there you go. And for a low, low monthly fee, you can get your license for using the operating system online. And for $350, you can buy one of these machines and access Windows 365 online.
Yeah. If there's a problem with that, what happens if you don't have an internet connection?
I don't know. Maybe you just have to sit back and read a book.
A book? So, not meaning to hijack this, I read a little bit about these thin clients and what they're planning, and I think they're going to have like just enough of a Windows system to boot and connect. But it was finally brought up to people after there's just recently a 365 outage that affected.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just recently. And it's happened a couple times this year. So they're talking about maybe they should have a little bit more system where you can at least do basic stuff without connectivity until it's connected. But Microsoft has been telling us that they want to go to more of a subscription service. They want to get away from the pay once in lifetime thing like the Office used to have. You could pay that fee once and then use it until it just wouldn't install anymore. Now they want to do away with that because they're looking for a constant revenue stream. That's the whole idea behind it. They want to, you know, tie your system into a bunch of services. And if you look at the way they're going, that's exactly what they're trying to do. So the thin clients, they've tried that before. Didn't Oracle try that? And it didn't work out very well.
Yeah.
I mean, there is still outages. I mean, how long ago was that? The whole one with all the airports were shut down, whatever it was. CloudStrike.
Yeah, I forget what it was. Yeah.
CloudStrike, yeah. So
you're dependent on too many things.
Yeah, you need to have a fallback.
Yeah, your browser has to work. Your internet has to work. You know, the antivirus still has to work. Lots of things like that, that most of which you don't have to worry about with Linux.
No.
So not only are there a lot of Linux distributions, my estimation is they're better than any old version of Windows.
I agree.
So let's move on to myth number 4.
Okay. Linux is obsolete because it's old. Linux is based on Unix, developed in 1969, but has survived more than 30 years of testing. It is still being tweaked and improved by the best computer scientists worldwide. As you know, Windows 7, 8, 10, and all the rest only live for a few years before a new system entirely replaces them. This is due to either technical problems or planned obsolescence to protect income streams. So Linux is not based on Unix. It is completely rewritten. You could say Linux uses Unix as maybe a model, but there is no Linux code in Linux.
Yeah, there's no Unix. Yeah, you can say it's based on the concepts of Unix.
Yeah, concepts. That's a great one. I think that's just a misstatement, I think, by them. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, Unix was developed, but in 1969 with Bell Labs.
Yep.
But Linux is much more modern. You know, it's based on the concepts because from the story I understand, Linus Torvalds couldn't afford Unix, so he's going to, because the licensing fee were too much. it was need specialized hardware and stuff. So he wrote, I think it was, wasn't the first one called Minix?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then,
that's my understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is free BSD is based on Unix. Split off. So if, but they're both, use, what is the system? They're both, they both are compliant with the Unix protocols.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, and one's just was written from scratch by Lance Torvalds. So anyway.
Yeah. Either way, you can say Linux is old, maybe not as old as Unix. It is old. But unlike Windows, that has been replaced by different versions of Windows over time,
yeah,
Linux has been constantly improved over the years and decades, as the write-up says, by the best computer scientists worldwide. And, it's constantly being improved. So yeah. Just because it's old doesn't make it bad.
They just added the real-time kernel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been working on that to get it where, that's important for mission-critical, like recording and running some critical systems that needs a system that can switch quickly for, like, recording stuff. So, yeah, they've been working on that, but they have a real-time kernel now. So, That's pretty impressive. I mean, and that's all written from scratch. So the kernel's constantly evolving.
Yep. Just because it's old doesn't make it bad.
Hey, we're old, and we're well.
Yeah, we're not bad. Well, yeah. we're not bad.
We're slower.
Anyway, moving on to myth number 5, Linux is 100% secure. Yeah, not quite.
No.
Linux is far more resistant to malicious code than Microsoft Windows, at least in part because the source code is freely available. Experts worldwide can inspect and test Linux to find security flaws and write patches as fast as possible. Yet the threat landscape keeps evolving, and you must stay ahead. You can take 2 steps to make your Linux more secure. You can use antivirus, and you can use a VPN. Although you don't need antivirus to kill the viruses in Linux, you might want to use antivirus if you're sharing files with people who are using Windows because, you don't want to get a file with a Windows virus that can't infect your Linux machine and then make some adjustments to whatever that file is, and then send it back or send it off to somebody else and infect them, and then you're being accused of, oh, your Linux machine gave me a virus. Yeah. No, that doesn't work that way.
So what it's kind of funny is you're 100% right. Someone could send a file with the Windows malware or virus, and it won't affect your system at all. You just send it on. I mean, the next Microsoft gets infected, but I mean, it's still on your system. It just can't do anything. So,
yep.
I got 2 other suggestions, just to keep you even. Oh, I have 3 suggestions. 1, when all possible, use the software repositories of your distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 2, don't open a terminal and put programs in that someone says, type this into your terminal and hit enter. Just don't do that.
Copy paste? No, not a good idea.
Yeah, copy paste this terminal. You wouldn't do that in Windows. Why would you do it in Linux? Okay. And then the last one is, if you're installing something and it asks for your password, make sure you know what it's asking permission to do. Sometimes, and people get so used to just entering the password and hit enter just to get it out of the way, but you always look to see what it's, because it'll tell you it wants to make changes to your system. You need to make sure you know what it's going to do. So never just blindly hit your password and go on.
Yeah. And for inexperienced computer users, one more suggestion that I can make is understand the difference between working in a browser and working on a program that's installed on your computer. I see that a lot where people are saying, oh, the program is asking me to do this or that or the other thing, and it is the browser that's asking you to do it, or it's the application that's running in the browser that's asking you to do something. Just because something says, you know, your machine is infected with a virus and we can install this to clean it up, just click here. And you're working in Firefox or you're working in Chrome or something like that, take a look at what's going on there. I've seen computers appear to be completely locked up with a big red screen that says, your computer is infected. Do not shut it down. Install this to fix it. And you can't do anything because the browser is running full screen and... unless you know that the browser is running full screen, it looks legitimately like there's something wrong with your computer, except if you just terminate the browser, you can, or get out of full screen mode and close the browser window. Nothing's wrong. It's just you've clicked on something in the on a website that's taken you to a malicious web page that's trying to get you to infect your own computer with something they're trying to give you.
Yeah, and you just gotta be a good steward of that of your computer, whether you're running Windows or Linux. Linux makes it a lot easier because you don't have to worry about a lot of stuff. Nothing's 100%. I think is what we should go. So
yep.
Our summary is that so even though some or all of these myths may have made you hesitant to consider to switch to Linux, now you can be more informed about making a good decision or an informed decision about whether you want to use Linux or not. So
yeah.
I hope we busted these myths and it gave you a little bit of peace of mind. And if you have any questions, feel free to send it in to us and we'll try to answer them without too many rants. But knowing me, I will find something to rant about. So. Larry's the much one that stays on topic. I'm the one that goes off on the past. So anyway,
yeah. No, that's what makes this show interesting. If it was just me, it might get a little bit more boring because your rants and stories and experiences are exciting. they inject some excitement into the show.
I mean, most of it's self-inflicted, though. I mean, you've seen some of my self-inflicted wounds. It's been kind of hilarious.
You know, so. Well, listen, I have self-inflicted wounds as well. I just don't talk about them.
I do.
So there you go.
All right.
Anyway, moving on, our next episode will be listener feedback, as always.
Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining a discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.